headlines this hour. Israel's indiscriminate strikes claim more Palestinian lives in Gaza, as the death toll from the regime's genocide tops 34,000, mostly women and children. More crimes by the Israeli regime, as its forces shoot and kill two Palestinians near the occupied West Bank city of El Khalil. And Tehran says the U.S. Security Council is in action on Israel's attack against the Iranian embassy in Syria, forced Iran to launch Operation True Promise. Warm welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us. More deaths and destruction have been reported as the Israeli regime keeps pounding the Gaza Strip with airstrikes and artillery. In the latest massacre, 8 Palestinians were killed in the city of Rafah, most of them children. Several others were killed in Jabalia and Nusayrat refugee camps. Many more have also been injured across the coastal territory. Since the start of the Israeli genocidal war in Gaza, over 34,000 Palestinians have been killed, mostly women and children. The casualty figures are likely much higher, with thousands buried under the rubble. On Saturday, the Palestinian Civil Defense said that its crews recovered the bodies of 50 Palestinians buried by Israel in a mass grave inside the Nasser Medical Complex in Khan Yunis. Let's get more from our correspondent Muti Abu Musaba, who joins us from Dar al Balah. Muti, tell us more about what you have, and in particular this mass grave that's uncovered another, where I believe there's 50 of them. You may have covered this already, I'm not sure, but if you can maybe recount that for us as well.
Yes, actually, according to Gaza's self-defense crews in Gaza Strip, they have found and they have discovered at least 50 Palestinian dead bodies. They were buried in a mass grave in Khan Yunis city, particularly in the yards of the Nasser Medical Complex. After they were buried inhumanely by the Israeli occupation forces, they were killed and buried by the Israeli occupation forces during their ground offensive against the Nasser Medical Complex, taking the whole number of the Palestinian dead bodies which were extracted over the last couple of months to roughly 150 Palestinian dead bodies, while there are still at least 500 Palestinian civilians missing under the rubble of those destroyed houses and in massive graves by the Israeli occupation forces. So it's another crime added to the long history of the Israeli crimes committed against the Palestinian people. And according to the estimates of the Gaza Civil Defense crews, that there are hundreds of the Palestinian civilians are still missing and trapped under the rubble and in massive graves in Khan Yunis city particularly. In the continuation of the Israeli crimes, the Israeli warplanes carried out several air strikes against multiple areas of Gaza Strip, basically in Rafah city, whereas at least 15 Palestinian civilians, including 13 Palestinian children, were reportedly killed by the Israeli occupation forces after they were attacked inside their houses, which were subjected to heavy bombardments of the Israeli relentless air strikes. It's worth mentioning that Rafah city has been under heavy bombardments for roughly 2 consecutive weeks. Every day, at least 3 to 4 horizontal buildings being destroyed by the Israeli warplanes. This escalation actually is seen by the Palestinian people, basically in Rafah city, as a preload to conduct the ground offensive. Because, as you know, it is known for any area to be subjected to a ground offensive to be attacked heavily by the Israeli warplanes and the artillery shelling. And here in the central area of Gaza Strip, basically the northern part of Nusayrat refugee camp, it also was subjected to heavy bombardments of the Israeli airstrikes and the Israeli artillery shelling that was maintained all the night. And here in the vicinity of the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital in Deir el-Balah city, it was also hit relentlessly and continuously by the Israeli artillery shelling. Massive explosions were heard over the last night here, in addition to continuous and multiple Israeli strikes that hit the vicinity of the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital. In Gaza City also, the Israeli warplanes and the Israeli occupation forces actually conducted more attacks against the Ashata refugee camp, which was subjected to heavy bombardments of the Israeli military boats. And even in Jabalia refugee camp, the eastern part of Jabalia refugee camp also was hit and targeted by the Israeli artillery shelling. So we are talking about continuous and intensification of those Israeli attacks, including the airstrikes, artillery shelling, and even the gunfire of the military boats against different areas of Gaza Strip. Those attacks actually took the whole number of the Palestinian civilians who have been killed and slain since the beginning of this onslaught on Gaza to roughly 34,050 Palestinian civilians. And this number actually is exponentially rising with these continuous attacks against Gaza Strip.
Thank you so much, Muti Abu Musaba there from Darabala. Thank you, Muti. On to the occupied West Bank, where Israeli forces have killed two more Palestinians at a junction near the city of Al-Khalil. The Israeli army claims that one of the Palestinians tried to stab a soldier, while the other opened fire at the regime's forces. Our correspondent Mona Kandil joined us earlier for more details.
The Israeli military declared this morning that two Palestinians arrived at the Beit Aynun intersection. It's northeast Al-Khalil at the entrance of the Palestinian village of Beit Aynun. One Palestinian had a gun. He opened fire at the Israeli soldiers there, and the other Palestinian had a knife, and he was running towards the Israeli forces to stab them. However, the Israeli troops at the scene immediately opened fire at the two Palestinians, and they neutralized them. This means that they opened fire, shot, and killed them. This is what the Israeli military is saying. The Israeli military is also saying that none of the Israeli forces had been wounded. The identity of those two Palestinians is still unknown. The Israeli forces have confiscated the body, and they themselves who informed the Palestinians. The Palestinians that the two Palestinians who arrived at the Beit Aynun intersection tried to stab and to open fire at Israeli soldiers to carry out an anti-Israeli operation. They were shot and killed. However, they did not reveal about their identity. We have to remind our viewers that today, Sunday, there's a general strike and a state of mourning had been declared here in the occupied West Bank to mourn the killing of at least 14 Palestinians were shot and killed by the Israeli forces in Tul Kerem, in Nur Shams refugee camp, an operation that lasted for almost 3 days since Thursday.
Tensions are running high between Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah and Israel in southern Lebanon. On Sunday, Hezbollah said it targeted buildings used by Israeli forces in the settlement of Shumaira. Our correspondent in Beirut, Mariam Saleh, was earlier with us for the details.
Now we know that they have targeted two residents that are being used by Israeli soldiers in the settlement of Shumaira. Now, Shumaira is considered by the Lebanese government a Lebanese town, the town of Tarbiha. So it is one of seven Lebanese towns that are considered Lebanese occupied territory. Yesterday we saw them also target another area, which is the town of Salha. We also have another operation for the resistance where they targeted espionage and technological devices in the barracks of Dubiv. Seems that Hezbollah is also very much alert on when the Israelis do plant new devices, and therefore they target them. And this is also a part of the long war. This is definitely a war where you have the intelligence element and the factor of the intelligence issue very significant. And when the Israelis were blinded at the border, they needed to use other instances and devices. They also had the issue of the Meron base, they needed to use that also to get intelligence. Hezbollah made it clear that they also targeted that base as well because they, of course, in retaliation for the heavy striking deep in the heart of Lebanon, but also to tell the Israelis that they have the ability to be able to target their devices and their basically their frequencies and all their attempts to get intelligence from Lebanon.
The Islamic Resistance in Iraq says that it has carried out a fresh drone strike against Israeli positions in the occupied Syrian Golan Heights. The Iraqi movement says that it struck a vital target in the occupied heights. It said the attack was in response to the massacres committed by the Israeli regime against Palestinian civilians, including women and children. The group said that it will continue its operations against Israeli targets. In recent months, the Islamic Resistance in Iraq has conducted a series of attacks against Israeli positions. It has also hit U.S. military bases in Iraq and neighboring Syria, retaliation for Washington's support for the Israeli genocide in Gaza. The Iraqi resistance movement Hezbollah al-Najaba has held a seminar in Baghdad The meeting comes after a deadly airstrike on a military base belonging to the resistance fighters in the Iraqi capital. Now, we've talked to some of the participants at the seminar about the attack. Let's see what they had to say.
In one way or another, the Zionist regime and the U.S. are responsible for this attack. Whether it's agreed upon or not, it clearly aims to weaken our anti-terror forces by targeting the popular mobilization forces, which is a shameful act. The PMF is a national security force, and attacking such entities following our Prime Minister's visit to Washington is dishonorable.
Definitely, there's collaboration between the Zionist entity and the U.S. It's said that the attack was carried out by the Zionist army, but we know that it happened with the help of the U.S., since it has military bases in Iraq. Thus, Washington is responsible for facilitating the Israeli attack on the PMU. The U.S. plans to postpone its withdrawal from the Iraqi soil, and that is why it denies any involvement in the attack.
The goals of the attack were a bit vague for any party that seeks to respond. The U.S. denied that it had carried out any attack in Iraq, and some sources say it was carried out by international coalition forces, while some data shows that Israel is responsible. So until now, it is unclear, and thank God, it was a failure for whoever was trying to target the resistance forces.
The attack was another violation of Iraqi sovereignty and airspace in a series of violations that we have witnessed, which targeted our security forces and resistance without any justification. We believe that the reason America and its allies keep targeting our resistance is that they have deep fears of our forces.
America's denial of carrying out the attack doesn't necessarily mean that it was not involved. We all know that the U.S. collaborates with the Israeli regime, which now tries to attack the resistance front in an attempt to achieve its malicious goals in the West Asia region.
Iran's foreign minister says the UN Security Council's inaction on Israel's attack on the Islamic Republic's embassy in Syria prompted Tehran to launch its punitive action against the regime. Hossein Amir Abdullahian was speaking in a phone conversation with the South African counterpart, Naledi Pandor. The Iranian minister reiterated Iran's position that it is not after the expansion of the conflict in the region, but it will give a forceful response to any mistake by Israel. Regarding South Africa's genocide case against Israel at the ICJ, Amir Abdullahian hailed it as a historic initiative. Pandor, for her part, stressed the need for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. Journalist and political analyst Mohammad Ali Araki says Iran's punitive operation against Israel had the support of the international community.
The retaliation that the Islamic Republic of Iran implemented just a few days ago, the support that Iran gained for this, it was built over time. This was built over time, and the international world now completely supports the Islamic Republic of Iran. They have seen that it is possible to bring a apartheid terrorist regime down to its knees, just as the Islamic Republic of Iran did. And the apartheid regime of Israel did not expect the Islamic Republic of Iran to retaliate the way that they did. It was a complete surprise to them. This is based on their own confessions. The Israeli officials said this themselves. And so this is very important because the apartheid regime of Israel no longer has its previous support, its previous position in the international world. We can realize this through many different examples that are ongoing, from the case that South Africa took to ICJ, where the Israeli apartheid regime of the Israeli apartheid regime has never been taken to the international court in the way that it was taken to buy South Africa.
The U.S. president has signed into law a bill that extends the government's warrantless spying powers for 2 years. Joe Biden signed Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act after it passed the Senate by 60 against 34 votes. The move was slammed by privacy advocates inside and outside of Congress. They said that it allows intel agencies to spy on the communications of non-U.S. citizens, including communications on such service providers as Google. The activist group Demand Progress said the law is a dangerous tool in the hands of any president and a historic mark of shame. The Brennan Center for Justice also said the law is shameful and is a gift to any president who would wish to spy on political enemies, journalists, and ideological opponents. The Hamas political bureau chief Ismail Haniyeh has visited Turkey amid rumors of the group's leaders repositioning from Qatar. Haniyeh was warmly received by the Turkish president at his residence in the city of Istanbul, where the two officials discussed a host of issues, including the delivery of humanitarian aid to Gaza. Correspondent Roshan Saglam has more.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan received the head of the Hamas political bureau, Ismail Haniyeh, in Istanbul. During the meeting that lasted for more than 2.5 hours, the two sides discussed the Israeli aggression on Gaza, ways and measures to ensure uninterrupted and sufficient delivery of humanitarian aid to Gaza, and the lasting peace in the West Asia region. During the meeting, President Erdogan stated that amid ongoing tensions in the region, it is important to keep the world's attention on Gaza and not allow the Israeli regime to achieve political gains from its standoff with Iran. In a statement published by the Turkish presidency, Erdogan said, "It is vital that Palestinians act with unity in this process. The strongest response to Israel and the path to victory lie in unity and integrity."
"Today's meeting was very important for both Turkey and Hamas to set ground for the upcoming changes. We all know now Qatar is hosting Hamas bureau and leaders, as well as playing the role of mediator in negotiations with Israel. While there is a pressure from Washington for Hamas to leave Qatar, and there is the question of where will Hamas go now, we know that the relation of Hamas and Syria is getting better, and it already has a good relation with Iran. But I don't think they are a choice, and for that, Turkey will be the best option."
Analysts say Turkey will not only be hosting Hamas movement leaders and bureau, but will also take the lead in mediating to reach a lasting solution for the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. Hamas had an office in Turkey since 2011, and Turkey mediated in exchange of prisoners. Turkish president maintains warm relations with Haniyeh and says he will always defend the Palestinian cause. Today's meeting takes place against the backdrop of Qatar potentially stepping back from ceasefire talks. This development could create a vacancy that Ankara is well positioned to fill, given Turkey's established relations, particularly with the Hamas movement, which many view as a strategic advantage. Roshan Saglam, Istanbul.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Could you tell a little about yourself?
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old, and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of law.
Listeners Special.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warmest greetings to you all. Welcome to another edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, April 21st, 2024. I'm Atefe Erfani, hosting this program today. Listeners, especially, is the Sunday program where your views are presented through your emails, your letters, and your messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our programs. Tell us which program or programs you like the best. And if you have any message for our listeners around the world, you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. Remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. So please keep us company until the end of the program. And as yesterday, Ordi Behesht first was marked in Iran as the national commemoration day of the renowned Iranian poet Saadi Shirazi, born in Shiraz, southern Iran. In this edition of Listeners Special, I just wanted to talk about this renowned Iranian poet. Abu Muhammad Moslehuddin bin Abdullah Shirazi, known by his pen name Saadi, was one of the major Iranian poets of the medieval period. Saadi is known as a mystic and metaphysician in the history of Iranian literature. He is recognized for the quality of his writings and for the depth of his social and moral thoughts. The ancient scholar has gained worldwide fame, not only in Farsi-speaking countries, but in Western societies, with his poems being quoted in a multitude of sources. Saadi, who lost his father in childhood, experienced the youth of poverty and hardship. He left his hometown of Shiraz at a young age for Baghdad to pursue a better education. His first experience of education was at the Nizamiya University of Baghdad, where he studied Islamic sciences, theology, law, history, and Arabic literature. He traveled to different countries such as Anatolia, Syria, Egypt, and Iraq for 30 years. He also visited Quds, Mecca, and Medina. The master of speech, as he is called, was a man of learning and traveling. He mingled with people from different groups, from intellectuals, merchants, preachers, farmers, and ordinary people to Sufi dervishes and even thieves trying to learn and study and also preach and advise people to gravitate to wisdom and morality. Returning to Shiraz, southern Iran, as an elderly man, Saadi was greatly welcomed and respected by the ruler and the prominent figures of the city. He spent the rest of his life in his birthplace, Shiraz, till he passed away in around 1292. Of course, during the program, I will talk about Saadi, this Iranian poet, more. For the time being, let's see who has sent us a reception report. In this edition of Listeners Special, we read the names of those of you who has sent us reception report, including Muhammad Sahadat Hussein from Bangladesh, D.K. Hazarik from India, Mizanur Rahman, one of our old and regular listeners from Bangladesh, who has sent us reception reports. So, Muhammad, DK, and Mizanur Rahman, we want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. Thank you for sending us these reception reports. And as you may know, these reception reports are very helpful to us at IRIB English Radio, because these reception reports actually help us promote the quality of our programs. Thank you very much. And Mr. Anand Mohan Bain from India, one of our old and regular listeners, has sent us a piece of email. From the US, we've received an email from Muhammad Khaku, one of our old and regular listeners. And Muhammad Sahadat Hussain from Bangladesh also has sent us a piece of email. I will read this email later during the program. Stay with us, please. So let's talk about the masterpieces of Saadi, the renowned Iranian poet. Saadi's best known masterpieces are Bustan. Bustan means the orchard. Bustan was completed in 1257, and also Gulistan, which means the flower garden, which was completed in 1258. Bustan, as his best known work, was completed in 1257, as I said. It is quiet in verse, including 4,000 verses in 183 stories about the virtues such as justice, kindness, love, modesty, liberty, generosity, satisfaction, and happiness, and also some of the practices of dervishes, addressing all people to have a better and happier life. A year after the completion of Bustan, Saadi composed his masterpiece Gulistan. Gulistan comprised of 8 chapters, which is mainly in prose. The book widely addresses king's morality, dervish's behavior, benefits of contentment, silence and talking in proper time, love and youthfulness, weakness in old age and education. Saadi attempts to advise people to live freely and to improve the quality of their lives in Gulistan. It is one of the most effective books in prose in Farsi literature. Saadi's other works include ghazals. Ghazals are love poems or lyrics, sonnets. Qasides, which are longer mono-rhyme poems or odds. Quatrains and short pieces in prose in both Farsi and Arabic. He is known as one of the greatest ghazal writers of Farsi poetry, besides Hafez, who is one of our renowned Iranian poets. So, for the time being, we just come back to your emails and letters from around the world. And this time we've received an email, as I said, in the introduction part of our program. Mr. Anand Mohan Bain from India has sent us a piece of email. Mr. Anand Mohan Bain says, I'm sending this mail from Bilai, Chhattisgarh, India. I like your program, listeners, especially. It's a good program. I wrote many times that your reception is not good in our area. I hope things get better. Kind regards. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you, Anand Mohan Bain from India. Thank you very much for writing to IRIB English Radio. And thank you for your support and commitment. You said you like the program, listeners, especially. Actually, your positive vibes actually give us the energy to continue our path. Appreciations to you, Anand Mohan Bain from India. So, you mentioned that the reception is not good in your area, and we will inform this notice to our technicians and engineers, and if the trouble is on our behalf, we will fix it soon. Don't worry about it. Thank you again, Mr. Anand Mohan Bain from India. Please accept our EQSL as confirmation to this email. Write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs. Thank you again. Welcome back. So, I was talking about the Iranian renowned poet Saadi. Saadi elaborately distinguishes between the spiritual and the mundane aspects of life in his works. He tries to visualize the deepest meanings of life in the most tangible context and close to conversational language as far as possible, in such a way that even common people can get the most out of his writings. He's a well-known poet among world scholars, Goethe, and under du Reyer presented Sa'di to the West for the first time in 1634. The first complete translation of Golestan in English was done by Sir Richard Francis Burton, for your information, actually. In one of Sa'di's most well-known immortal poetries, he considers all humans as different parts of a whole body, regardless of social barriers and race, saying, human beings are members of a whole, in creation of one essence and soul. If one member is afflicted with pain, other members uneasy will remain. If you have no sympathy for human pain, the name of human you cannot retain. It was great. It was great. It was about the unity of all humans, which is assimilated to a whole body with different parts, actually. Okay, let's come back to our emails. As I said, Muhammad Sahadat Hussain from Bangladesh has sent us a piece of email. Muhammad says, we are regular listeners and well-wishers of your radio. I have been listening to Radio Tehran's programs for a long time, sending opinions, giving suggestions. IRIB Radio is our favorite radio station. We also love Iran. So glory and success of Iran is considered as glory and success of Islam to us. Islam, Iran, and Radio Tehran are the heartbeat of our hearts. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you, Muhammad Sahadat Hussain from Bangladesh, and thank you very much for writing such a great email to IRIB English Radio. Thank you for your compliments. It was great. Please accept our EQSL as confirmation to this email. Write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs. Muhammad Sahadat Hussain from Bangladesh. Welcome back. So, I was saying, Sa'di's tomb is located in southern Shiraz, southern Iran. His mausoleum is called Sa'diye. It is one of Iran's major tourist attractions. Much think is left to talk about Sa'di, but time is short. And now, I prefer to read one of your emails. Muhammad Khaku from the United States has sent us a piece of email. Muhammad Khaku is one of our old and regular listeners who says, the Iranian response of Zionist Israel was defensive, while Zionist Israel had violated Article 22 of Vienna Convention and Article 51 of the UN Charter by bombing the Iranian embassy in Damascus on April 1st. The world has watched anxiously in anticipation of Iran's response. Now Iran fired a volley of drones and missiles at the Israeli-occupied lands, accompanied by an orchestra of similar calibers out of Lebanon, Syria, Yemen, and Iraq. Israel is politically isolated and increasingly seen as a pariah state with unprecedented global condemnation and genocide charge to be brought to the docket of the International Court of Justice by South Africa. Israel does not care about the United Nations or the International Court of Justice. It is absolutely a pariah state after bombing the Iranian consulate. We are beginning to see the downfall of U.S. hegemony globally. This may be one of the straws that breaks the camel's back. The U.S. or Europeans have no ethical, moral, or even legal platform to lecture any country anymore. Israel and America have sown trouble and are reaping the whirlwinds of increased trouble ahead for them. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, to you, Muhammad Khaku from the U.S. Thank you very much for this email. It's good to hear that you follow the world developments, especially the developments regarding the Zionist regime's brutality, especially the Zionist regime's recent attack on Iranian consulate in Damascus, which was in violation of Article 51 of the UN Charter. And as you said, Iran responded to this Zionist regime's brutishness. Iran responded with retaliatory attacks against the Zionist regime's targets. And it's good to hear that you follow the world developments. And as you said, the Zionist regime's attack against Iran violated Article 22 of Vienna Convention and Article 51 of the UN Charter by bombing the Iranian embassy in Damascus on April 1st. And of course, everybody knows that the European regimes, the Western regimes, especially the United States, are complicit in every act the Zionist regime does around the world, whether in Gaza, in Gaza genocide, whether against Iranian, soil, which happened, for example, recently in against Iranian embassy in Damascus, or anywhere in the world. Yes. The Zionist regime, the fabricated child-killing regime of Israel, the Western regimes, and the United States regime are all complicit in any crime. They are hand-in-hand in doing any crime against the world people. Many thanks for writing to us, Mohammad Khaku from the U.S. Write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs. Art is long, but life is short. We've come to the end of this edition of Listeners Special. But before saying goodbye, I just wanted to send my appreciations to those of you who have kindly sent us reception reports and emails from around the world, including Mohammad Khaku from the United States, Mohammad Sahadat Hussein from Bangladesh, Mizanur Rahman from Bangladesh, DK Hazarik from India, and also Mr. Anand Mohan Bain from India. Please keep in touch with us. We wish you all the best. God bless you and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We will be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send us emails to englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at parstoday.ir/en. Our phone number is 0098-21-2201-3720. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. The Zionist regime's genocide against Palestinians in Gaza is 6.5 months old. It has taken the lives of at least 34,000 people, although that number is more likely to be 40,000 because of those still under the rubble. And at the same time, the regime has caused such destruction of human lives and infrastructure in Gaza, the Zionist entity has continued to wreak havoc in the region, and of course, not just during the last 6 months, but for decades. We're going to take a look at all of this on the Spotlight. I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Out of Dublin, Asad Abu Shaikh, Palestinian academic and activist. And out of Manchester, Peter Ford, former British ambassador to Syria.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
But thank you both for being with us. I'd like to start it off with Assad. Now, the Israeli regime is the root of most of the instability in the region. Your thoughts on this statement?
Yes, of course. Israel is the mother of all evils in that part of the world because it was created as an apartheid state, settler, colonial state, to serve the interests of the West at the expense of the Palestinian people, to ethnic cleanse the Palestinian people, to implant European Zionist Jews in order to serve the interests of the West and to keep that part of the world unstable, not settled, and to launch, so that Israel can launch series of wars. Israel, ever since 1948, launched wars after wars aimed at ethnic cleansing the Palestinian people in order to bring and to pump in more Jews from Europe and to pump out more Palestinians from Palestine. Of course, Israel is being supported, as we said, and created and invented by the West, by Americans, by the British, by the French, by all Europe, not all, ever since 1948 and before 1917, Balfour Declaration, and even before that, when they started to send Zionists to Palestine in order to take the place of the Palestinians. So now Israel is committing now, this time, genocide with the support and psychological support, propaganda support, military support, economic support, political support, media support of the West. They wouldn't even accept to impose ceasefire, immediate ceasefire, lasting ceasefire, and they wouldn't ask Israel to withdraw. Although Israel, this time, this Nakba, I'm not talking about the first Nakba, this Nakba killed thousands and thousands of children, thousands and thousands of women and people, destroyed the infrastructure, destroyed mosques, destroyed schools, universities, churches, everything. They destroyed everything, and they declared that. They said, we are going to destroy, we are going to kill all the Palestinians, this is what they say. And then they said, we are going probably to drop an atomic bomb. There are no innocent people in Gaza.
Okay.
That all the Gazans should leave. And this is, they are being supported by the West.
Okay, stay with me, Assad. Let me get our other guests involved in this conversation. Well, Peter, even during this genocide, in the middle of this genocide, the regime has regularly bombed Syria, causing death and destruction. I mean, what is it after in Syria? Why does it continually attack Syria?
Israel attacks Syria partly because it's a relatively easy and cost-free thing to do. The government of Syria is in no position to retaliate against the very powerful Israeli state backed by America. Syria is a country with a quarter of its territory occupied effectively by the United States. which, working through some local mercenaries, controls Syria's oil. So Israel is able to get away with murder, literally with murder, in Syria, at least it was until very recently, when it murdered the Iranian generals in Damascus, a new page was opened and a red line was crossed. It's one thing to attack the poor Syrian army, which can hardly defend itself. It's another thing to attack the embassy, the consulate of an important country with an important military like Iran. And Israel is now beginning to learn the hard way that you don't cross red lines with Iran. You must think very, very carefully before you take a risk of confrontation with Iran. And what's happening now is that the Israelis have come off second in the struggle with Iran, in the exchange of attacks on each other's territory. And Israel is now licking its wounds. I suspect this is why it has now returned to its easy target of Gaza, where again the Gazans are, like the Syrians, are in no position to inflict major military defeat on Israel. This is the easy way for the Israelis to try to restore the pride that was lost this week in their confrontation with Iran.
Mm. Well, Assad, we've also seen time and again the regime attacking Iraq, and last night was no different, although the Israeli regime has not admitted to carrying out the attack against its popular mobilization forces. It is reported that fighter jets took off from the Israeli entity, flew over Jordan to Iraq. And by the way, the PMF was created as a counterterrorism force to stop Daesh in the beginning, in the first place, during its terror campaign in Iraq. Your thoughts about the regime's goal in attacking the PMF?
You see, Israel has always been attacking its neighbors and using different methods of attack, whether it is military or security or underground and whatever. But Israel now, this time when they attacked, of course, Syria, they attacked before Iraq, they attacked Egypt before, and they attacked Lebanon, blah, blah, blah. But now, this time, I think when they crossed the lines against Iran, of course, they received a response, very, very, very strong response, which was televised, and everybody saw it, and I think it was celebrated by the Palestinian people and by the Arab peoples in the area. And this is why Israel, of course, couldn't do anything, although it is being supported by Western countries and especially by the Americans. But also the Americans and Western countries do not want an all-out war in that area. They encourage Israel to retaliate, to do some limited retaliation, but not to start an all-out war, because they know that if there is an all-out war, that Israel will be greatly affected. And not only Israel, their own interests. This is the most important thing for them, their own interest. But Israel remains an element of instability in that part of the world. And as long as, I'll tell you, as long as there is Israel in that part of the world and there is an occupation of Palestine, I think there can never ever, I repeat, never ever be peace or stability or security in that part of the, in that part of the world, unless all European Zionist Jews who were sent to occupy Palestine are taken back to their countries of origin in Europe.
Okay, well, Peter, I mean, the Zionist entity has also continuously now bombarding southern Lebanon, as a Lebanese resistance group, Hezbollah, has kept the pressure on the regime in order to occupy it on its northern front. Your thoughts about the continual tit-for-tat between the regime and Hezbollah, and how effective has Hezbollah's actions been?
Well, back in 2006, people will recall, there was a very serious war between Hezbollah and Israel with exchanges of thousands, not hundreds, thousands of missiles and bombs on each side. And the result was a defeat for Israel. Israel was forced to withdraw its troops from southern Lebanon. It was forced to admit that it had been unable to defeat Hezbollah. And the result was 18 years of peace on that border. Israel had been deterred from attacking Lebanon by Hezbollah. That area, the border area, enjoyed 18 years of almost complete peace until the Israeli invasion of Gaza. This is what provoked the instability on that northern Israel border with Lebanon, because Hezbollah wanted to help the resistance forces in Gaza and therefore started to shell Israeli targets just across the border. And this led to exchanges of fire. In the end, about 100,000 Israelis living along that border have been forced to leave their homes entirely as a result of the Israeli attack on Gaza. Those Israelis are suffering a little bit, just a little bit, of what the people of Gaza are suffering.
Peter, let me just jump in here. So basically, what you're saying when you compare like 2006 and what happened and Hezbollah basically getting rid of the regime as far as attacking them, are you basically saying that you have to hit the regime with force to cause a deterrence? Otherwise, as we see in other places and especially what they're doing to the Palestinians in Gaza, they will do whatever they can to cause havoc and basically tyranny wherever they are.
Exactly. This is about deterrence. Hezbollah created deterrence for Lebanon against Israel. Iran, just in the past few days, has reinforced, I think, the power of Iranian deterrence against Israel attacking Iranian assets wherever they are. And a very important thing that happened in the last few days is that senior Iranian speakers made clear that Iran would no longer tolerate the series of not just one or two, but there must have been a dozen attacks on Iranian targets, including scientists in Iran itself, Iranian personnel helping defeat ISIS in Syria, Iranian personnel in Iraq likewise helping to defeat ISIS. That it was made clear to the Israelis this week that these attacks would no longer be tolerated and Iran was going to establish deterrence. Well, that is what has now happened. And with luck, this will actually make for more stability, at least on those fronts. But the weaker parties, the Palestinians of Gaza, the Palestinians of the West Bank, the Syrians, they do not have deterrence because they're not strong enough alone. And these areas will remain unstable.
Well, Assad, it is not just since the Holocaust in Gaza, but the Zionist regime has wreaked havoc in the region for decades, from terrorism, either directly or indirectly, to attempts at regime change. And they have done it all without any condemnation from their Western backers. How responsible are these Western regimes for Israeli crimes?
You see, human rights and democracy and, so-called values and the principles of justice, of humanity, of equality are a farce. The West is not serious. This white supremacist mentality this European, whether it's European or American, downgrades others and consider them lesser people, and they do not care for them, because they created, as I said, Israel at the expense of the Palestinian people, and they are supporting and financing and funding and sending weapons. And all the world now knows, all the world, even European people, they say that how Israel is butchering Palestinian children, men, women, destroying everything. And the West wouldn't even ask for a ceasefire, wouldn't ask for a ceasefire. And they keep sending weapons, and they keep visiting that apartheid Israel, and providing it with all kind of help and support, moral and material and military. And they wouldn't. This shows how hypocritical, the hypocrisy, the double standard policy of the West, and they are exposed after their own true colors. This is why there are huge demonstrations in the streets of most of Western Europeans, because even the European people are shocked of the brutal and savage and monstrous behavior of their own government, and of how they treat other people. And I think democracy now proved to be false, human rights false. I think things are going to change in the whole world. And nobody is going to believe the West or when they talk about justice, when they talk about human rights, when they talk about democracy, and things are changing. They know that it is the West who stole traitor regimes in the Arab world in order to cooperate with the Zionist regime to kill and to conspire against the Palestinian people, not only against the Palestinian people, they conspired against Iran, against Syria, and against Iraq, against body, against anybody, any country which resists Western hegemony and Western control of that part of the world. So I think the whole world is going to change from now on, but the resistance will continue, the Palestinian resistance will continue, and I think we will see change even in the Arab world, because the Arab peoples are disillusioned of the high treason of their regimes, saying that Gaza is being butchered in cold blood by the Zionists and by Europe and by Biden and by, you know, all these people, while the Arab regimes are doing nothing. They wouldn't even allow a bottle of water from crossing point from Rafah. They are all just spectators on this genocide against the Palestinian people.
Okay. Well, Peter, when Netanyahu was asked in an interview who are Israel's enemies, he said he could name three: Iran, Iran, Iran. What does that mean about the role Iran is playing in countering Israeli terrorism?
Well, Netanyahu, for once, spoke the truth. You know, even a broken watch tells the truth twice a day. And it is correct that Iran is the only country in the region which has the ability to stand up against Iran. All the Arab countries are weak compared with Iran. They don't have either the military capability or the determination or even the desire to resist Israel. Nevertheless, some Arab countries have been more guilty than others, and the participation of Jordan in recent events is perhaps going to, in the end, Jordan may pay a heavy price, because Jordan is one of these other weaker countries in the vicinity of Israel, and weak countries should not take risks. Iran is the only country which is able to bring into play not just its own military, but important allies such as Hezbollah and the Hashd al-Sha'bi, which has just been attacked in Iraq, and other armed groups also present in Syria and Iraq. Therefore, Iran is able to respond to aggression on not just one, but several fronts, and this is an important part of Iran's deterrence. Now, this situation is complicated by the